Thank you to everybody who's joining us once again on the virtual Beis Medrash. Thank you for learning Torah together with us. As we know, this coming week is going to be the day in which we celebrate Yom Yerushalayim. And everybody has their own way of celebrating or not celebrating, but we all must agree that this is something that is a day that must be marked on the Jewish calendar as a Yom of Hatzalah. It's a day of tremendous salvation. It's a day that unbelievable miracles transpired, and we need to be very grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the gift of Yerushalayim. What I'd like to focus on this evening is not Yerushalayim in particular, but really the highlight of Yerushalayim, which is the Hakravas HaKarbanos. As we know, when Yerushalayim was Bibinyana, when Yerushalayim was in its full state of being rebuilt, we know that the highlight of that experience was people used to visit the Beis HaMikdash, and karbanos were offered in the Beis HaMikdash on the Mizbeach. And what I find fascinating about our discussion that we will have tonight is that this is something that came up so many times throughout so many generations. The same argument happened over and over and over again, and it seems to be unresolved. And that's what I find very interesting. Usually, once an argument happens, we resolve that argument and we move forward. And then we argue about new things. Jews always find new things to argue about. I don't mean interpersonal that they argue with each other, but in halacha, that which has already been taken care of in the past is something that we generally don't need to open up once again. But this is a sugya, surprisingly, that comes up so many times in the pages of halacha throughout so many different generations and situations. It all starts with Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. That's how early back this discussion goes. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi were the three Nevi'im who, as we know, after Galus Bavel, after the 70 years of the Jewish community being sent into exile, they were given the promise from the outset that after 70 years they would have the opportunity to return. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, who were the leaders at the time, tried to convince everyone that they should be on this movement to go back to Eretz Yisrael, to move back, and they were very unsuccessful in doing so. But Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, we are told in the Gemara Maseches Zvachim, they came back to Eretz Yisrael and they said the following halacha. One of them said that this is the place of the Mizbeach. He said, I have a Nevuah, and I know that this is exactly where the Mizbeach is supposed to be built. His friend turned to him and he said that I'd like you all to know, Afal Pisha Ein Bayis, I'd like you to know that even though there is no functioning Beis HaMikdash right now, we haven't yet gotten ourselves together to build a Beis HaMikdash. We're lucky enough to be back in Eretz Yisrael in the first place. But he said, I'd like you all to know the good news, and that is, we are able to offer karbanos even though we do not yet have a Beis HaMikdash. And that is a surprising statement. The reason why it's surprising is because I was always under the impression that the only way you can offer a karban, the only way you can do all of the description that the Torah gives of offering karbanos is when you have a functioning Beis HaMikdash, which includes a Mizbeach and everything else that needs to come along with it. And yet here, Haggai teaches us a tremendous chiddush, and that is that afal pi she'ein bayis, even though there is no Beis HaMikdash, it would seem that one would have the right to offer a karban. Rashi there in Maseches Zvachim picks up on this strange comment, and he says, how can that be? If you don't have a Beis HaMikdash, what right does one have to offer a karban? And Rashi says the reason why is because Haggai was of the opinion that Shechina ena betela, that although we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, the place where the Beis HaMikdash stood retains its sanctity. That is an indestructible Kedusha. That is something that is permanent. And therefore, he said, even though there is no Beis HaMikdash, we are of the opinion that the original sanctity that was infused into the Makom HaMikdash when Shlomo HaMelech built it is something that remains forever. It is true that maybe the building has been destroyed, maybe the building has been demolished, we've been away for 70 years, but the Navi says, no reason to be concerned, we can offer karbanos even before the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. As we know, the second Beis HaMikdash was then rebuilt. This conversation then became irrelevant because everybody was able to use the Mizbeach that was housed in the Beis HaMikdash, the way karbanos are supposed to be brought. And then once again, after the Bayis Sheni was destroyed, after the few hundred years of that service in the Bayis Sheni, the Beis HaMikdash was now destroyed and the Sanhedrin go to Yavne. And that is where they stay for a certain period of time. And once again, the Mishnah writes in Maseches Idios that this once again comes up as a discussion. Now that we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash, are we in the same place that our forefathers were when they were kicked out of the first Beis HaMikdash? Do we have a right to offer karbanos today the same way that Haggai believed he had a right to offer karbanos in his day when there was no Beis HaMikdash? And this becomes a discussion in the Mishnayos, which is one that is brought to the head by Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua, two of the greatest Tanaim. And Rabbi Yehoshua says, Shamati, I have a tradition that makrivin afal pisha in bayis. I have a tradition from my teachers that one is able to offer a karban even though there is no Beis HaMikdash. Why is that the case? Shekedusha rishona kidsha l'shaita v'kidsha l'yasid lavo. I have the understanding from my great teachers that came before me that the sanctity that was infused into the Makam HaMikdash is eternal. It is everlasting. And this is a Mishnah that is quoted in the Gemara Maseches Zvachim. It is quoted in Maseches Megillah. It is quoted as well in Maseches Shavuos Daf Tezayin. This is often quoted in this discussion because, once again, it started with Chagai Zechariah Malachi. It then took a hiatus for the time period when the Bayis Sheni was in active service. And once again, it came up after the Bayis Sheni was destroyed as to whether or not they were able to reinstate the offering of karbanos. Surprisingly, the opinion of the Rambam as well is makrivin hakarbanos kulan afal pi she'ein bayis. The Rambam writes that we would have the ability to offer karbanos even today when there is no Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam then asks the obvious question. V'lama ani yomer, the Rambam says, why am I of the opinion that b'migdash of Yerushalayim, why do I believe that the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim retain their status of Kedusha? How does that idea come to a head? The Rambam says the reason why is because the impetus for the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, what infused Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash with Kedusha, was not our service, but rather it was the fact that God rested His Shekhinah there. And therefore, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu resides in that place, you can destroy all you want. You can take down the building. You can all leave the city. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself is indestructible. His presence is permanent. His presence will be felt there forever. And therefore, the Rambam says, in my opinion, the Beis HaMikdash, the Makom HaMikdash, and Yerushalayim as a whole retain their status of original Kedusha that they had in the days of Shlomo HaMelech. The Ravid very firmly disagrees with him, but this is the basic discussion that starts off once again with Chagai Zechariah Malachi, moves ahead to the days of the Tanaim, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, moves down to the Rishonim in the days of the Rambam and the Ravid, and it doesn't stop there. It then continues to the days of the later Rishonim in the 1300s. There was a Rishon by the name of Rav Eshtori HaParchi. I don't know too much about him. What I do know is what many people know, and that is that he wrote a sefer called Kaftar Vaferach. This sefer was written and finished the writing of the sefer in the year 1322, but for some reason it was lost. The manuscript was not available to us for about 200 years. It wasn't printed until 1548 for the very first time, and then it became a very popular sefer and a very important sefer in halachic literature. And there, he discusses many of the halachos that are relevant to living in Eretz Yisrael. He writes in the introduction to the book, Rav Eshtori HaParchi, his name is actually a street name in Yerushalayim today, Shenizke, we should be able to go and walk those streets of Yerushalayim. I crave for those days when we'll have that opportunity once again to get on a plane, to go to Yerushalayim, and to stay in Yerushalayim. We won't have to come back at all. But Rav Eshtori HaParchi made it a life mission to write an important work about exactly the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz. He wanted to clearly delineate how one is meant to live in Eretz Yisrael, how one is meant to behave when they work the land in Eretz Yisrael, and he wrote really a groundbreaking work which is quoted by none other than Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. So there, in the Sefer Kaftar Vaferach, he writes, Hein ha'yisi kishtei shanim b'galil. He says, I spent 2 years up in the Galil. Doresh v'choker es ha'aretz. You would think Rav Eshtori HaParchi was one of the Gedolei HaRishonim. The Beis Yosef finds him important enough to be quoting him in the Shulchan Aruch, and yet he says, I spent 2 years of my life looking at every plant and every facet of the land in the Galil. because he said, I thought it was important. And after I was done with that, I spent 5 years Bishar Aratzos HaShvatim. I spent 5 years walking around the land. I wanted to learn everything I possibly could about the land of Eretz Yisrael. Lo manati atzmi sha achas meiragel asa'aretz. I didn't stop for one moment of my life to walk around the land and to appreciate what Eretz Yisrael is and how important every single facet of the land actually is. Baruch HaOzer, he says, I give a tremendous debt of thanks to the Ribono Shel Olam for allowing me to have the strength to walk around the land of Eretz Yisrael, to study the land of Eretz Yisrael, and to come to an understanding of everything that Eretz Yisrael represents to us, the Jewish people. So, in the Sefer Kaftav Aferach, he writes an amazing story, that this discussion did not end in the days of the Tanoim, it did not end in the days of the Gemara, it didn't end in the days of the Rambam or the Ravid. It continued on, and he says, Rabbeinu Chaim Miparis was one of the great Rishonim who came from Paris, went up to Yerushalayim, and he had a great idea, and he wanted to start offering karbanos in the 1300s. And the Kaftar Raferach writes that this opened a firestorm, and nobody knew how to handle it. What are we supposed to do? Should we accept his proposal to start offering karbanos, even though there's no Beis Hamikdash? If somebody would come to us today and suggest such a thing, we would all think the person was crazy. And yet this was one of the great Rishonim. And Rav Ashtori HaParchi writes that this created a major discussion amongst his contemporaries whether or not they should accept it. Now he goes through what some of the objections, what are some of the obstacles, what are some of the halachic challenges. As we know, the Rambam just told us, based on the Gemara, based on the previous discussion by the Nevi'im, Chag HaZecharia Malachi, that one is allowed to offer karbanos even when there's no functioning Beis HaMikdash. Because Kedusha Rishona, Kidsha Liyasid Lavo. So what are the obstacles that we need to overcome? And why is it that we don't have this idea of offering karbanos today in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash? And he goes through the discussion and he says, most obviously the problem is going to be that all of us are Tameh. All of us are Tameh in some way or another. We've all either come in contact with a dead body, attended a funeral and been under the same roof as a dead body. In some way, either we touched somebody else who was in contact with a dead body and we don't have a Parah Aduma today, and therefore we are all considered to be Tamei Meis, so we are not able to get ourselves out of that problem. So how do we overcome that most obvious basic halachic challenge that existed in the days of the Rishonim as well? And he says, well, the truth is that's not a problem. That's very easy to get around because, as we know, the Gemara writes in Maseches Psachim that we have a concept called Tuma Hutra B'tzibur. The Gemara says if you have a karban that needs to be offered, and for some reason everybody is Tameh, or most of the Jewish community is Tameh, you are allowed under certain circumstances, under certain conditions, to offer that karban by people who are Tameh, by people who are not Tahar, which is an anomaly. It's very unusual that we should allow for such a thing. But the Gemara says we do have such a concept. And therefore he says this really would not be a problem at all because we can get around it simply by saying the entire Jewish community today is Tameh. And because all of us are considered to be Tameh, therefore we assume that we would be allowed to offer a karban bituma as well. The next question that he raises is, well, what about the fact that a karban that is brought on behalf of the tzibur has to be brought from the machatzis hashekel money? Now, we all have a concept today on Purim that we give a zecher lemachatzis hashekel. It is not the same. All we're giving is tzedakah. It's a gimmick for us to give more money. So we have one pushka in Shul on Purim that says Machzis HaShekel. We have another one that says Matanis Le'Avyonim. We have a third one that says Mos Purim. We have another one that says Tzedakah. Another one that says Gemilas Chasadim. All of those go to the same place. And it's a nice thing. We should all give money. We should all give Tzedakah to the best of our ability. We should put into all of those different pans, all the different pushkas. It's great. It's wonderful. However, Machzis HaShekel in the days of Chazal, or certainly in the days of the Psukim of the Torah, we know that Machzis HaShekel was an obligation that we all had to give a half a shekel. Now, what did they do with that money? That money was taken to the general fund of the Beis HaMikdash, and it is that money that was used to buy the karbanos, to buy the animals that were brought on behalf of the entire Jewish people. Well, today, he writes, this would be a problem. We have Jews scattered about all over the world. How are we going to start collecting a Machzis HaShekel from everyone and buy a karban on behalf of all of them to offer a karban? Just a technical problem. So I happen to have just gotten an email today that there's a $1 campaign, everyone should give money to a certain fund, but again, you're not going to hit every single Jew and you're not going to get everybody from all over the world to give. So that is a second obstacle that he discusses. How do we get around that? It's funny, I mean, not funny is the wrong word, it's interesting, that that was not the end of the discussion. That was, as we said, in the 1300s. This is something that started in the days of the Nevi'im, as we mentioned. But then once again, in the 1700s, this creeps up into the halacha conversation yet a fourth time. So Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger was one of the great gedolim in Germany. He wrote the sefer Binyan Sion. Translate the words, it means building Yerushalayim. And the reason why it's called that is because the first tshuva in his sefer is about this topic. Are we able to offer karbanos in Yerushalayim today when we don't have a rebuilt Beis HaMikdash? Do we have the ability to do that in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash? So he discusses this, and he lives in the end of the 1700s. He passed away in 1871. One of his contemporaries was the great Gadol Rabbi Kiva Eiger, who passed away in 1837. And he, too, has a major discussion about this, along with his son-in-law, the Chasam Sofer, who passed away in 1839. Parenthetically, it's interesting. The Chasam Sofer was only 1 year younger than his own father-in-law. And you'll ask, how is that possible? How is he only 1 year younger than his own father-in-law? That seems like a strange phenomenon. The answer is that the Chasam Sofer's first wife passed away. I believe his second wife may have as well. I don't remember. But one of his later wives, either his second or his third, was the daughter of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. So the age gap was not as great because this was not his first shidduch. This was something that came about later in his life. And the Chasam Sofer corresponds with his father-in-law. In some way, he was a contemporary, because he was also recognized as one of the great gedolim of that time, of that generation. But in other ways, he also has to speak with him in a certain way because he is his son-in-law. So he was a Talmud Chavar, as they call it, which was a very interesting relationship. And they all got involved in this discussion in the beginning of the 1800s because there was a student of Rabbi Kiva Eiger by the name of Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, who decided that he wanted to go on this campaign again. And he wanted to go to Yerushalayim, and he wanted to once again have the opportunity to offer karbanos, even though it would seem almost impossible. The problem was he had no idea that there was a mosque built on that place. He had no idea that it wasn't even feasible in the first place. He was just imagining, what would it look like if we made a pilgrimage to Yerushalayim and somehow we got to the Har HaBayis? Would we be able to? And he tries to work out all of the halachic problems with regard to this issue. So he raises some new issues, and he says, we have the problem of Machzis HaShekel. We have the problem of the fact that we're all Tameh. What about the problem that we don't even know who is a bona fide Kohen today? Now this is an issue. So it's not a problem when it comes to giving an Aliyah to a Kohen in Shul, because if it turns out that he's not a Kohen, not a problem. We gave a Aliyah to a nice fine Jew. Even if he's not a Kohen, it's okay. We're all able to overlook that. What about Pidyon HaBen? That is a major question. How are you able to do the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen if you don't really know who a Kohen is? Do I need to walk around my whole life finding every single Kohen and asking him, can you redeem me? Because maybe the one that I did last time around didn't work. So this is a question that has many, many different iterations to it. But over here it comes up because we need a bona fide Kohen to be the one to offer the karban on our behalf. There's no other way about it. And therefore he said this is a major obstacle that we don't really have a clear listing of who are the Kohanim Miyuchasim, who are the registered Kohanim that have been known to be Kohanim for many, many generations. He then writes that there is another issue, and that is we don't have a Navi, and therefore the Navi is unable to tell us exactly where on the Har HaBayis the Mizbeach was. So it's true we may not have a Beis HaMikdash, and it's true we may not have a Mizbeach, and it's true that we might be able to offer a carbon in the absence of all of that. However, the problem is that we don't know exactly where that place is. And Rabbi Kiva Eiger says, on top of all of this, even if we were somehow to figure out who a Kohen Miyuchas was, and we would figure out all the other problems, he says, we also need Big Day Kahuna. The Kohen, in order to do his job properly, needs to be wearing the right garments, and it has to be made of very specific fabrics, very particular materials. And therefore, he says, since we don't really know what is our Gaman, and what is Tola Ashani, and how do you figure out exactly how to make the all of the Big Day Kahuna, he says these would be a lot of halachic challenges. Again, this was put to rest in the early 1800s, but it was a major controversy in the early 1800s. None of them even realized that it wasn't even a feasible possibility because there was a mosque there anyway, and there would have been no chance that they could go and offer a karban on the Har HaBayis regardless. What's very fascinating is, again, in the 1900s, this comes up yet a fifth time. And then Reb Shimon Sofer, from the family of the Chasam Sofer, decides he's going to re-energize the community and he wants to get this conversation going again. So he sends a letter to Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, who was the head of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim. If anyone ever read the book Ish Al HaChoma, it's a beautiful book all about Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. I remember I had a sibling who was in seminary and was told to write a report about the book Ish Al HaChoma. He was an important personality in the history of Yerushalayim. He was the head of the Eid HaRedis, and he stood firm. It's called Ish Al HaChoma because he stood firm. He didn't want to give in to anything. And it says like he stood watch by the walls to make sure nobody would breach the law, nobody would breach the halacha. And he really elevated the spiritual experience of many, many Jews in Yerushalayim at the time. That's why his biography is called Ha'ish Al HaChoma. So my sister at the time, when she had to make this report, made the cover of her report a picture of Humpty Dumpty on the wall, which obviously is a joke. But it was an interesting play on the words. Ha'ish al HaChoma. There was a man on the wall. But the truth is, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld was a tremendous Adam Gadol, a tremendous leader. And in his days, once again, this conversation got started. So what we find is that this is something that was discussed very, very broadly. It started with Chagai Zechariah Malachi. It went down in history to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua. The Gemara then quotes it in a number of cases as well. After that conversation ended, somehow it opened up once again in the days of the Rishonim in the 1300s. After that quieted down, the Rambam and the Ravid started again. When that stopped, it once again opened up in the days of the early Achronim in the early 1800s, and then once again in the 1900s. So this is a very fascinating issue that has been on the table. As we know, the general accepted custom is that we do not offer karbanos, even in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash, even if we were to figure out how to get around all of these halachic challenges, all of these obstacles. We know that the general practice is that karbanos are not offered. Every year before Pesach, you see pictures of some group of people who go dressed in all these interesting looking clothing and they offer a sheep somewhere near the Har HaBayis. I don't know what it's all about. But this is the generally accepted opinion that we do not offer karbanos. There was a push this year in Yerushalayim that people wanted to bring a Pesach Sheni. And my father actually wrote a very strong letter of opposition that he felt that was really something that is unacceptable for reasons beyond our conversation. But anyway, this is a conversation that has been an ongoing dialogue for many, many, many hundreds of years. So today, what do? We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have the ability to offer karbanos. What are we meant to do? So in Parshas Pinchas, we are told, Olas Shabbos b'Shabbato. That's a familiar sentence to us because we say it as well in our davening on Shabbos. What does it mean that you have to bring an Olas Shabbos b'Shabbato? I have to bring in karban on Shabbos for its Shabbos. Says Rashi, it means that I'm not allowed to bring a karban for Shabbos Parshas Bamidbar on Shabbos Parshas Naso. Every Shabbos requires its own karban. If for some reason the Beis HaMikdash was in a state of disrepair, or for some reason nobody was available and we were unable to bring the karbanos on Parshas Bamidbar, we cannot do a do-over on Parshas Naso. Once you miss it, it's too late. Avar Yomo, Batal Karbano. And from here the Gemara learns in Maseches Brachos a very practical halacha, and that is, what if a person misses Tfilas Shachris one day? I'm busy, I had a Hatzalah call, I was doing something, I'm a doctor, I had a surgery, or I was a patient and I had a surgery, whatever it is, I was unable to daven Shachris. And now that I wake up from my surgery, now that I'm finished doing whatever medical work I need to do, I'm now able to daven. But the problem is, it's past the Zman Shachris. So what do? Says the Gemara, you have a right to daven two Shmona Esreis by Mincha. One Shmona Esrei is going to count for Mincha. One Shmona Esrei is going to count as a Tashlumen, as a makeover for the Shachris that I have missed. Now, says Rabbeinu Yonah, what if you have somebody who is in jail for 5 years, and because of that they were unable to daven because the conditions in the jail were just so low that it was smelly there, and it just wasn't the proper conditions for them to be able to daven? Or say, for example, you have somebody who was in a coma for a long time, and now some miracle happens and they wake up, and they're able to daven. Do they now have an obligation to make up the 10 days that they were in the coma? Do I have to start spending my whole day making up all of those tefillos, Shachris, Mincha, Maor, for all those days that I missed? So this is a discussion in the Rishonim, and some Rishonim say, why not? We have a concept of Tashlumin, but other Rishonim say, no, Tashlumin only works if I miss Shachris, I can make it up in the next Zman Tefillah. I can make it up in Mincha for what I just missed by Shachris. But if a few days went by, I am unable to make it up then. Why is that? That is based on our pasuk here. Olas Shabbos b'Shabbato. Avar zmano batal karbana. Once it gets too far away from the time of when you're supposed to daven that tefillah, you are unable to have a do-over, you're unable to have a makeup for that tefillah. So this is a very interesting discussion. The Shulchan Aruch writes that the psak seems to be that we do not allow a tashlumen, we don't allow a do-over tefillah, unless it is the tefillah that is closest to the one that you have missed. So again, if I miss Shacharis, I can daven Mincha twice. If I miss Mincha, I can daven Maariv twice. If I miss Maariv, I can daven Shacharis twice. But it doesn't work beyond that. Shulchan Aruch does quote this other opinion. However, it seems that that is not generally the accepted practice. That is not generally what we do. It's a major discussion why we don't do it. But anyway, that is the basic story. So the B'nai Yisaschar has a fascinating comment. I don't often quote Hasidus Shesvarim because I don't often learn Hasidus Shesvarim. But the B'nai Yisaschar quotes a comment, Lehalacha, that he has from the Rambam Ipanu. And I don't know how much of this is actually halacha or how much of it is actually a Hasidus Shevart. But it's fascinating to me that he quotes it from the Rambam Ipanu. And it's very interesting what he says. And he picks up, the Rambam Ipanu picks up on the fact that every Shabbos and Yom Tov we say something which seems to be a little bit of a misquotation. He says we say that we look forward to the day when we're going to have a Beis HaMikdash. Ves Musaf Yom HaShabbos Hazeh. Nase v'nakru v'fanecha be'ava k'mitzvas ritzonecha. We say that on Shabbos and we say it on Yom Tov. Now the simple translation of the word is, we look forward to the day when we're going to be able to offer karbanos on Shabbos, Parshas, Bamidbar. We hope the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt in the next couple of days and we'll have the opportunity to offer a karban this Shabbos. That's the simple understanding of what it means. However, the Rambam Ipanu writes, there was something troubling about that statement because it says, Es Musaf Yom HaShabbos Hazeh. What do you mean we're going to offer the karban of this Shabbos? We're not going to offer the karban of this Shabbos. Once we miss it, it's too late. Once we miss Parshas Bamidbar, and we don't have the opportunity to offer the karban because there is no Beis HaMikdash, how will we be able to offer Musaf Yom HaShabbos Hazeh? So I think the simple answer is that we mean, next year Parshas Bamidbar will be able to do the same thing that we otherwise would have done this week. But says the Rambam Ipanu, no. When God is going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, He's going to give us the opportunity to have a makeover for all the karbanos that we missed throughout all the years of the Galus, which is an unbelievable statement. It's an amazing comment. And he says, what we say in the tefillah, Ves Musaf Yom HaShabbos Hazeh, is actually a very literal comment. It means that if we missed Shabbos Parshas Bahar B'chukosai this past week because we had no Beis HaMikdash, and before that we missed for the last 150, 250, 500 years, 3,000 years, we missed offering all those karbanos on Parshas Bahar B'chukosai, guess what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us the opportunity to offer all of those karbanos. The first time that we have a Beis HaMikdash, Parshas Bahar B'chukosai, He's going to allow us to have a makeover for all those thousands of Shabbosos that we missed for the time when the Beis HaMikdash was not built, was not Bibinyana. That is an astounding comment. That is an unbelievable observation that he makes in the davening itself. As Musaf Yom HaShabbos Hazeh, he takes it quite literally and he says it means, even though we don't offer karbanos today, we will have the opportunity to offer karbanos at a later date, at a later stage. Either way, as we know, since we don't have the opportunity to offer karbanos today, the Gemara says, Kala osek b'toras chatos kilu hikriv chatos. It is important that we all make time in the morning to say not only the tefillas hashachar, which consists of all that we ask for, all the brachos, all the tefillah, all the bakasha, but in the very beginning of the Siddur, we know that there is a few pages that is listed as karbanos. And it is important that we say that because the Gemara says, our assumption is, if somebody talks about karbanos, it is as if they have actually offered the karbanos in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, the Torah writes, it is important that we have this as part of our tefillah, because today we don't have the opportunity to offer an actual karban, but it is important that we do something in its absence, and at least we talk about karbanos, at least we talk about our urge and our interest in offering those karbanos, should we be granted that tremendous opportunity. I think it's interesting that there was a big discussion about how far do we take that. So do we say, if let's say a person is unable to keep Shabbos for whatever reason, Chas v'shalom, the people who are in the concentration camps, lo aleinu, Are they able to just talk about the laws of Shabbos and then it's considered as if they've kept Shabbos? How far do you take this? If I don't live in Eretz Yisrael and I'm not able to keep Shemitah and Yovel, but I learn the halachos of Shemitah and Yovel, is that sufficient? Would that be as if I have observed the mitzvah itself? It's a big discussion, but I once saw on the Sfasemes that he has a beautiful comment in Parshas Bo, Achsidah Shavart, but he says that when the Gemara here says that when I involve myself in a mitzvah that I'm unable to do, it's as if I've actually performed it, he says, Kala osik b'toras hagalos, kilu avar alav hagalos, which is a beautiful comment. And he says, if somebody talks about the stories of how painful life was for so many generations, for so many Jews who went through very difficult times, maybe that will be good enough for them to be considered as if they've been through their own galus. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels that people need to be punished a little bit and they need to go to galus, and says the Sfas Emes, maybe by telling the stories of all those who went through difficult times, maybe that is sufficient to count as our galus. The same way the Gemara says, if we talk about the karbanos, it's as if we have offered the karbanos. Yihi ratzon sheniske, we should have the opportunity to have a Beis HaMikdash once again. V'sein chalkeinu b'sar asecha, once again, when we have the Beis HaMikdash, we'll be able to offer karbanos, we'll be able to have the Torah back to the place where it's supposed to be. V'sham na'avadcha b'yira kimei olam uchshanim kadmonios. I wish all of you a wonderful evening, and Rabbi Leibowitz will get started momentarily.